I wanted to offer some reflections this morning on social action. You know, we're entering into a period of active uprising in our country, asking for change and healing. You know, we are seeing footage of violence and abuse that is upsetting, shocking, dismaying, angering. And most of us are experiencing, you know, anger, sadness, frustration. And it's fine to feel that, because these are strong actions that let us know that something is out of balance, something is out of harmony and needs our attention. And with it, there's a desire for positive change. So all good. But how do we engage? How do we respond while keeping integrity with our practice and our realization? While we're experiencing anger and outrage, how do we respond without acting angry and pissed off in a way that just makes things worse? How do we walk our talk? And, you know, our tradition calls this engaged Buddhism or engaged spirituality. And this is tough. I'm a little nervous about even giving this talk because it's a fraught area. I was listening to a talk by Adyashanti the other day when he was remarking that this part of our practice of living the values of spiritual realization is the hardest part. His comment was, how do you make coffee in integrity with your deepest place? How do you read the notes? How do you talk to friends? How do we do this? And, you know, it is something that comes out of that still, silent depth inside of us that is expressing itself as our meditation practice. So the first thing is, the form of our engagement, our response, is not going to be the same for each of us. There is no one size fits all, and we are all called differently. And for that reason, as a teacher in our community, it feels skillful not to prescribe a particular action. Here, go do this, or let's do that. Not only because there is no one size that fits all, but because the process itself of inner inquiry that we each need to do to find this place for ourselves is the process of engaged Buddhism or engaged spirituality. So no one can tell you what to do, but the process of uncovering it is our work. So to engage our spirituality is to connect and to commit to that common foundational values that come from our deepest place of practice. This is where our sitting is essential, because it keeps us connected to that deeper ground. You know, when we're beyond that limited experience of separation of the ego self in that silent spaciousness, when you experience that, what emerges for you? You know, in those moments where you feel the most deeply connected, you feel the most peace, you feel your wisdom, you feel like you're in the right place at the right time, what comes up for you? Those are the values that we bring into spiritual action or into social action. Now, those things are going to be stronger for some people than others individually, but in general, what those truths are love, acceptance, peace, oneness, compassion. That's what we experience. And yet there are going to be times that we're going to be called on to respond, that we're going to feel disconnected. We might be tired, distracted, dispirited, irritated. What do we do then when we're not actually feeling those things? We're in the middle of a dinner conversation. Well, in those cases, in our practice, things like the Brahma Viharas are a wonderful guide. Is it compassionate? Am I sharing the joy of others? You know, is there equanimity? Is it kind? So in either case, You know, we feel integrity by using these truths, whether we're directly feeling them or whether we're faking it till we make it, as our inner compass. So before responding, to ask yourself, is this loving to everyone? Does this lead to healing and reconciliation? Does it feel strong? Can I let go of my own viewpoint? You know, it's so easy to worry about all of the suffering and the conflict in the world. But the world is nothing more than the mirror of all of our conditioning. It cannot be different than what we collectively put into it. That is the law of karma. And the more we touch that truth, the more it becomes apparent that the spiritual integrity we bring to our engagement matters more than any particular course of action we might choose. So the energy you bring to your response to social injustice and change, the energy itself is more important than any action. So to elaborate on that, let me just flesh that out a little bit. I've been a longtime student of the American Civil War, and really of war in general. I have a book in my library called Endless War for Endless Peace, in which a historian traces back every conflict fought in our country that was supposed to end a problem or bring peace, and shows how in actuality the war sows the seeds for the next conflict that arose. You know, and the more one studies the Civil War, the more obvious it is that the military conflict might have ended in 1865, but the war has been very much fought in other arenas to this day. You know, it's not really possible. The lesson of it is, it's not really possible to bring someone around to your point of view by beating them in a fist fight, by out-arguing them. You know, the deep racial pain and suffering in our country is an expression of that war still being fought as a war today. Conflict is not the answer. Conflict, separation, does not bring hearts and minds together. You know, and as practitioners, we understand this not only applies to the history of nations, but also to us as individuals. Inner conflict is not going to bring us to peace. So if we bring a conflict or a warlike mentality to our engagement, it will not make things better. It might win a battle, but it's not going to end the war. Its legacy is bitterness, and it's going to sow the seeds for the next round. You know, and we have a deep meme in our culture of redemptive violence. You know, we see it in movies, in politics, in religion. But you can't kill or bludgeon to peace. Only peace is the way to peace. So what is this warlike conflict mentality? What it might look like in ourselves? You know, for a lot of us, we have this sense of us and them, of people on our side and people on the other side, or the worldly dharmas, praise and blame, winning and losing, gain and loss, that our point of view is the correct one, and people who don't agree with us are somehow wrong or are less than we are, and being blind to our own biases. That's the conflict mentality of the small separated mind. You know, and it's not hard to feel solidarity with people who think like us and to see those on the other side as somehow less than us. But that's not the truth in that deeper place of our practice. You know, I read an interview some years ago with he was a National Guard soldier in the 1960s who'd been called to protect a college campus during that time of protest, much as National Guard has been called out today. And there's a famous photograph, an iconic photograph of him standing there in his uniform with his rifle while a young woman puts a flower in the barrel of his rifle. Those of us of my age remember that photograph well. Well, in the interview, and many of us saw that image as the idea of that flower power and love would conquer the military as a sign of love and anti-war sentiment. But this young man said he'd signed up for the Guard to serve his country, never dreaming he'd be on the street facing college students, and was standing there feeling all kinds of emotion, feeling scared, confused, wondering how it was he came to be in uniform and many of his friends were on the other side. And in his interview, he talks about when this young woman put the flower in his gun, he said it was one of the most violent things he had ever experienced. Not her action, but the conflict and war mentality with which she did it, because she saw him as the enemy, as the force of evil, and he felt completely dehumanized. So, if we aspire to changing what we see in that outer karmic mirror we call the world, something more than taking one side and thinking we're right is called for. You know, and this is going to involve a spiritual inquiry that maybe we're sitting here thinking, I don't know how to even embody that, where the ego-identified mind lets go and takes the back seat. I mean, what does this mean? You know, we are going to have to let being lead doing and not be afraid to rest in the quiet where that silence and that wisdom can unfold. So, the actions we take are going to be varied, but engaged spirituality means that those deeper truths of our practice are what leads us. For example, oneness. You know, no one is separate or different from us. And in fact, the word us doesn't even make sense because there is no other. You know, we understand every human reaction and action, even those ones that we recoil from, because we all have them inside ourselves. So we can look at them without a place of divisiveness or separation. You know, there's truly one human in the world, and we all know the same fears, the same triggered places, the same reactive places, making mistakes, getting defensive when we harden. You know, and it doesn't make us separate from each other. It's what we experience in common. You know, compassion and harmony knows that we're all dealing with conditioning. Some of our conditioning is more violent and wounded, and some of us, it's less violent and wounded. But harmony is seeing the deeper truth of being in each other and seeing the separation and divisiveness as not who we truly are, any of us. So leading from these truths that we move out into the world is the way, perhaps the only way, that we can find our more perfect union and move that long arc of justice forward. I realize this sounds a little extreme. You know, I had a deep lesson in this back in my 20s. I had gone with a political group to Lansing to lobby congressmen over a bill. And it was one of those issues that people disagree deeply and divisively on. And I was going to be the warrior for my cause. And maybe the second or third office in, the congressman I came into simply said to me, look, there's no way you're going to change my mind on this issue. There's nothing you can say. And I stood there feeling frustrated and wanting to see him as the problem. And then he looked at me and he said, you're from Ann Arbor, right? Well, what do you do? And I told him I was self-employed and I owned a tailoring shop. And he stood up and told me he was having trouble with his suit. And he showed me where it wasn't fitting him correctly. And we talked about what he might do to make it fit better. You know, and with that outreach, he went from being the opposition to someone who might walk into my shop needing an alteration. He shifted the ground from our disagreement to a place where he asked my opinion and I was happy to be of service to him. You know, and he helped me to see him as a fellow human so much more than someone who had a different point of view. I've never forgotten that gift. So not that we abandon in any way our deep sense for justice and for harmony and for equal treatment for all of us, but also remembering that being around people who think like us is easier. You know, loving our friends is not much sweat, but our practice calls us to something different, something deeper and truer. So if you're listening to me talking, going, wow, that's a tall order, I have no idea. How do I feel oneness with people who hate and kill? Well, good. That's exactly where spiritual growth happens, in that place of, I don't know. This feels bigger than anything I can do. Something bigger than me is going to have to lead the way. Yes, that's the point. So it's not about finding the answers. It's about being comfortable with the uncertainty of questions. So as Gandhi said, we have to be the change we want to see in the world. It means moving beyond that first response from our ego-identified mind. There's nothing wrong with having feelings of anger and sadness come up in response to violence. It is what propels us to injustice, and we honor that. But reacting with anger's voice in the driver's seat leads us to that place that feels sure and righteous and rigid. You know, and it's so easy to feel attached to opinions in the sense of being right. But it's also violent. It's violent because it cuts us apart. It divides us into us and them. And the results of that writ large is what we're seeing in the world. It's not the way. And I recognize what I'm saying is against the common culture. So again, a simple guide is to ask yourself before you say or do something, is it loving? Does it reflect unity and oneness? Is it compassionate? Does it open a way for hope, for reconciliation and healing? And compassion here understands we're not going to do this perfectly. Far from it. We're going to make many mistakes. That's okay. But it does commit us to owning the mistakes when we see them and staying engaged and moving forward. We have to be willing to let go of what doesn't serve those deeper values that we can hold integrity with and coming back into integrity. You know, I had a little something happen to me the other day. I decided to look at what Dharma leaders of color in America are saying in response. So I was on a website and signing up to be part of a racial, you know, discussion group. And one of the first things on the questionnaire, it asked me my race. Well, you know, I had a little reactivity come up of just going, wait, we're trying to move post-racial and they're asking me my race. And then I recognized that the tone in that was that self-righteous, I'm right, it felt rigid. And I thought, ah, that's just reactivity. It's part of my bias and just, it's there, but just put it in the back seat. So I filled out the questionnaire. You know, so that's one way when we're of noticing those little hard reactions when they come up and just noticing them. Oh, that's there. Let it soften and take the back seat. There's another really important guideline about engaged spirituality, and that's this. Even when we're dealing with the most difficult things, it has joy. It feels nourishing when you're doing it. It fills you up inside. It feels strong, and not the strength of anger, but the strength of just being integrity, of being one with something that is the power of the universe. You know, and that's a really useful guideline to checking in with what in you deeply says yes. So check your heart energy when you're about to say or do something. How does it feel? If it makes you feel edgy or irritated, it leaves you tired or drained, it's a good guideline. So even if it seems like a good cause, if it's not integrity with your energy, worth thinking about it. So true service, even when it's something difficult or painful, brings that connectivity and strength. It is what it feels like when you're in harmony with your truth. You know, if not, just notice it and stay back, take a breath and another look at it. So I'm seeing beginning to emerge in our national conversation, somehow are expressing the need to rethink our ideas about public safety, of how we respond to people in distress and fear, and what community well-being truly looks like, of reimagining our world beyond a response of force. That draws my heart. It feels good. There's a yes here for me. That's what I'm meaning, of going towards the things that feel that heart-opening quality to them. So whatever you do or don't do, I invite you to move from your own inner spiritual values. That is engaging spirituality beyond opinion, beyond judgment. You know, as Byron Katie says, everything in the world is here for us to wake up. You know, it's a way to wake up beyond this trance of being separate. So don't be satisfied with going back to old patterns of mental conflict, which is kind of going back to sleep. There's a Rumi poem that speaks to this, that I'd like to share. And Rumi says, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth. Across the door sill where the two worlds touch, the door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. You know, this is where the talk ended when I wrote it yesterday. And this morning, I woke up and thought about it and realized how much, as a white liberal person, this talk is filled with white liberal implicit bias. It doesn't make it wrong, but it's limited to a viewpoint. So please take it as such. You know, Vipassana means deeper, clearer seeing. And as such, our practice is well suited to where we must begin our engagement, seeing our biases, making the unconscious more conscious. Not that we're wrong, but just each of us is simply a viewpoint. Thank you.